This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, did you know that you're 27% smarter when you're positive? It makes sense, doesn't it? Having a positive attitude can change everything if you let it. Carm Capriotto here, the pioneer of automotive aftermarket podcasts and purveyor of wisdom. And I'm with Chris Cloutier at Vision 2022. Now, Chris came in. We didn't have an agenda or talking points. We sat down, and in classic Chris fashion, we had a blast. And I was on the edge of my seat listening to him. Find your positivity and get smarter. Hey, thanks to our partner Napa for providing this episode for you. The Napa Expo will be held July 18th through the 21st at the Venetian Convention and Expo Center in Las Vegas. Stay on the forefront of the latest technologies and industry trends. Registration opens April 2022. Not enrolled or interested in attending? Contact your servicing Napa store for more information. We're Vision 2022 with my great friend Chris Cloutier, and but great contributor to the podcast. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Carm. How are you?
You and I may have done an episode about, you know, I get my energy from people.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm energized.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the whole sleep thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. You don't sleep a lot when you come to
you
these.
You don't.
Especially if you want to network, and especially if you want to meet new people, and especially if you want to see stuff.
Plenty of opportunities.
Oh, yeah. It is. Yeah. Golden Rule Auto Care, Dallas, Texas. CEO of Autotext.me, a great friend of the show, a great contributor to the show. So you're saying, oh, Chris is back with Carm. I can't wait to listen to the whole thing.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
And because every time Chris comes on, he seems to bring me a topic that he nails, but he also says, I want something that we both can talk about.
Absolutely.
Part of the fun of coming to Vision and knowing so many of the people and having them on power panel thing, you know, why wouldn't I want to have Chris on once a quarter? Because we click and we make good audio together.
We really do.
And so why have an agenda, damn it?
Yeah, right? I agree.
And so I said, what'd you come here for? He says, well, me and Craig O'Neill were out doing some training. Was it yesterday?
Yesterday.
Yeah. Called Managing Change.
Yes.
Now, why the hell would you be here talking about that?
Yeah. And, you know, it was such a sexy topic. We were expecting like five people to be in the room. And there was more than five, Carm. It was a full room. Really? This is not a sexy topic at all.
It's not.
But apparently people want to change.
But it's hard.
It's hard.
I don't care if it's, you know, I really want a new haircut. Because you want to change for whatever reason, and then you get it and you say, oh, terrible, change is hard.
Well, you know, I started out the class with a quote from Rush, the great man Rush from Canada. Yes. And it's in this song, Tom Sawyer. Changes aren't permanent. And then I did my scream, but changes. And, you know, it was awesome, right? So I got him shocked. But then a lot of it has to do with as simple as losing some weight for New Year's. And a lot of people have this, right? So how do you change? So simple dietary changes to exercise changes to business changes, right? Yeah. We're constantly changing. Our changes aren't permanent, but change is permanent, right?
Well,
so it's a wonderful, wonderful topic.
I think if you've got a change mentality or you aren't afraid of permanency, then you can open yourself up to just the tweaks in life that are necessary.
Yes. With change, right, is finding the different portions. And I know we kind of move this into who, not how to, but a lot of times when we look at change, we look at ourselves to change. And one of the key missing facts of that is relate. So we kind of took this change class from a relate and these principles of this book called Change or Die, wonderful book. And he talks about relate, repeat, reframe. And that's kind of the concept of this whole change process that you go through. And one of the most important things that we forget about is the relatability piece. How are you relating? So if you're going to play soccer, you want to be a good soccer player. Do you hang out with tennis players? No. You hang out with soccer players.
Right.
You come to Vision, and just like you said, hopefully you're hanging out with really, really savvy shop owners. Mm-hmm. That's who you want to be hanging out with, right? Yeah. Because that's the people you aspire to be with. Those are the people who are going to give you great ideas. They're going to give you great advice. So I think it's a lot of we got to watch who we're hanging out with when we want to change. And I said this yesterday, and I ask people this question all the time when they say, hey, I'm going to lose weight. That's a wonderful change that a lot of people want to go through. But I say, how are you going to do it? And the typical answer is diet and exercise. You're probably not going to succeed more than a couple months because you're going to get like your motivation's going to fall off and you're going to find other things to do. But if you work with a trainer,
yeah.
then you're going to be more motivated to stick. And as a matter of fact, I have a trainer, personal trainer, me and my wife. And he said they did a study at a big, I'm not going to say the name of the organization, but it's one of the big chain places where you work out. And he said they've done studies. If somebody signs up at the beginning of the year and they don't have a trainer, by that third month, they're dropping off. And it's a high percentage. 60, 70% don't come back. They're done. But if they have a trainer, the chances of them lasting a year, 60, 70% success, right? You're relating. You have this person who's motivating you. You have this person who's holding you accountable. You have, you know, so that relation piece and change, we it's so obvious, but it's not obvious to us,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You have a trainer, right, Tracy?
Yes, I do. I've realized that I need that accountability because I don't enjoy working out. I don't find it
Nobody fun. Does.
I don't find it fun. People who say, oh, yeah, I love working out. You're lying.
Yeah,
there's
you're
no
lying.
Way.
You're lying. Yes, absolutely.
In order
absolutely.
To drag myself to the gym, I want to have a trainer that holds me accountable, that will have different workouts so I'm not stuck in the same routine, because what happens is you'll do all your favorite things at the gym.
And that's
and
all
then,
you do.
And then yeah. that's it. And yeah. so with having a trainer, too, it's allowed me to, okay, I see her once a week, but in order to get results, I need to go multiple times on my own. So it yes. kind of it pushes me that way. If I go once a week just with her, I'm so sore next day I can't walk.
Yeah, and she holds you accountable. Like you said, she'll ask you, how many times did you work out this last
she
week?
She does every
what
week.
What did you do? What were the exercises you did? Me and my wife, we do training together with the trainer. And so I've used different trainers throughout the years. But like you said, it's horribly wonderful because yeah. he just pushes us and pushes us and pushes us and pushes us. And it's, right. And it's, yeah, you're, I'm crawling out of the gym.
I'm going to have to get a trainer.
It's good. But then if you want to change your diet, you can go on Google all you want, but there's nutritionists out there. Yeah. And you know, the amazing thing with like the internet now is you have all of these prepackaged food places. You can go sign up for these programs.
Yeah.
And they, man, they make the meal for you.
They make the meal for you. Oh, by the way, I watch them commercials, and those plates that are, you know, that they show you, they're so big, but then you have to compare the thumb that's holding the plate to the size of the plate.
Right.
And I realize that's just this little tiny toast plate.
Where's the
that
beef?
This beautiful big rigatoni meal looks yeah. like it's sitting on.
Yeah. 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 Where's the beef? Great commercial, right? Yeah. Oh, good commercial.
Oh, my God. That's probably one of the best. In fact, where's the beef? Was to me still holds water today.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
I would love to hear the backstory of who the person in the ad agency that came
that.
In one
oh
day. They were sitting in front of Wendy's and says, "We have a campaign that's going to rock this world,
and it's
called
Change the World.
It's going to called Where's the Beef?
Still legit today.
And we're going to get this little old crotchety yes. lady yes. who I'm sure is dead by now, right?
Yes,
and she's gonna have this miserable look on her face, like, if you can't give me the beef, you know, there was more, not only the slogan, but just the person, her face, what
oh,
she
yeah.
looked like.
It's wonderful.
That tagged the ad to be so powerful.
Beautiful, beautiful piece. Beautiful piece.
Every time we get together with Chris, we just go wild places together because you really make me think.
Absolutely.
And let's go back to the episode we did just maybe a month ago on ego.
Yes.
Episode 717, if anyone's keeping track. And trust me, if you just flip your finger up a little bit in your player, you'll find it with Chris 717. You got to listen to this. It's kind of life-changing. Chris is very passionate about that. I started to read the book that you recommended. It's up on the books page on the website. And I think you nailed some of the big problems. Let's go back to what change is about. And if you're looking in the mirror and the biggest problem you have to change, to become more open to people, it's staring you in the face.
It's ego is the enemy.
Yeah.
And we talked about this, and I've corrected myself a couple times now. You can have confidence.
Yeah.
Because you have to have some confidence. But there's a fine line between confidence and hubris, where
right.
you're not listening, where you've closed yourself off. And that was part of our class yesterday. We were talking about that, right?
Yeah.
You've got to kind of listen and pay attention and drop that ego.
Yeah.
And kind of be childlike again.
Yeah.
You know, what does it mean to be childlike? It means to question, to ask questions,
yeah.
right? You might have the greatest mousetrap you've ever invented. That doesn't mean somebody else didn't invent another really good mousetrap that you can learn from,
yeah.
right? And that ego gets in the way when you're like, there's nothing I can learn from that person. There's nothing I can learn from that situation. There's nothing I can learn from anybody. I'm an expert, right? And if you know everything, you're not going to learn anything.
Hey, Carm here. Are you a wartime CEO or a peacetime CEO? Well, keep listening to find out the differences. The expo everyone has been waiting for is back. The 2022 Napa Expo is coming to the Venetian Convention and Expo Center in Las Vegas, Nevada, from July 18th through the 21st. Now, it promises to be the biggest and the best Napa Expo yet, so gear up for 4 days of business-building excitement, from general sessions and seminars to an enormous trade show that promises more suppliers, more space, and more products than ever before. It's all intended to help keep your business on the road to success. Industry experts will lead dozens of seminars throughout the day, and general sessions will feature speakers from a variety of backgrounds who encourage you to strive for excellence and inspire you to keep your eye on the end game. As for the trade show, with 200 Napa suppliers and 555,000 square feet of exhibition space, you'll use every minute of the double trade show hours to see everything there is to see. Visit with Napa suppliers about new products and equipment, as well as the latest diagnostic and repair solutions. There will be areas dedicated to brakes, tools and equipment, heavy duty, the Napa store, and Napa Auto Care, making it easier for you to locate suppliers on the show floor. The Napa Auto Care booth will showcase the cornerstone of the Napa Auto Care program and its elements, including branding and marketing, employee solutions, business management and development, process improvements, and gold certification. In addition to business, there'll be plenty of fun at the 2022 Napa Expo. The entertainment lineup includes country superstar Keith Urban, American rock band The Goo Goo Dolls, and the always entertaining Spazmatics, delivering the best songs and cool dance steps of the 80s. Hey, in addition to all the learning and networking opportunities, there will also be an amazing lineup of prizes with a variety of vehicles, from ATVs and motorcycles to cars and trucks. For Auto Care Center owners, the 2022 Napa Expo is a can't-miss event. If you are not a Napa Expo package holder and are interested in attending, contact your servicing Napa Auto Parts store. Hey, see you at the 2022 Napa Expo. Chris, who came up to you during one of your breaks or at the end of the class and said, thanks for the inspiration?
Had a couple young guys, and I think it was Jesse, and I'm trying to remember the names. I would have remembered them yesterday. I've slept since then, and I you know, stayed out probably a little bit late last night.
What? Yeah. You?
But they were very inspired by just the whole idea of change. And Craig did it with me, and he put some good frameworks into the class.
Oh, sure.
Me, I just like to talk, and sometimes I bloviate about things that I have no business bloviating
but let me tell you.
He puts a little bit of structure into my classes.
Thank
right?
you. In fact, let's consider that you guys could be the greatest tandem trainers.
We're a good team.
Because Chris is going to come on, and he is going to... You could put goosebumps on people. He's going to fire them up. He's, you know, being a musician like you are, you're going to bring it from the belly. Craig's going to come on. He's your process guy, I'm sure.
He
right?
is my process guy.
And he's going to come in and says, this was great, Chris, but let's start up here on the top of the chart.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right.
And that's exactly what these guys, they said, man, you gave us some really great material to work by. And then we were very inspired by the whole presentation. Right.
Uh-huh.
That's electrifying sometimes. It's wonderful.
It's part of the magic today is... technical training. We've done a lot of shows most recently on how do we get this knowledge transfer out and how do the guys really get it? Is there the pontificator in front of the class who just needs to get through their slides, or is it somebody there trying to change lives?
Yes. And we want to change lives. And once again, the whole point of the whole class, you know, a lot of what we do in software is we're actually managing the change of the shop. And whenever you do any new process or you adopt any new software or you... And a lot of times it's, you know, I sell software, but really what I'm selling is an adoption of a new process. That's really what it is. And sure. It's changing, and it's change management in your shop. It's taking and saying, hey, here's how you can do this a little bit better. But technology never replaces a process. It should improve the process, yeah. Right? I mean, wouldn't you agree it's a multiplier? It's not a, if you don't have the right people to use the process or do the process, technology isn't going to fix your problem. And a lot of times people think, oh, if I go get this digital inspection, it's going to fix my problem. No, you have a process problem. But that's what we help. My team, and that, you know, that's what I love about Craig and that team is I created a team to help manage that process and change.
Yeah.
And so that's when we're coming up with this class. We're like, hey, there's a big gap, right? Everybody wants to adopt these great processes and these great, you know, software ideas and all this, but they're really not ready. A lot of times they need to go through this change process. They need to understand what it means to change. And there's a lot of language when you're changing. Or immediately when you bring in the, you know, this new idea to the door, are your people going, I don't need that. That's going to take too much time. Are they about them? You know, there's one chart that's a I chart, me chart versus you kind of work your way up to a we chart.
Yeah.
An us chart, right? Where it's a difference of, hey, how's this going to work for everybody?
Yeah.
How's this going to affect the overall versus how's this going to affect me? And you want to get everybody thinking about the overall process, how it's going to affect, you know, the organization how it's going to affect them.
Yeah.
And then you can start really instituting change based off of that language, right?
I love what you said, but you said something just a few minutes ago, is that you sell software that's process change. I think you were going there.
Yes.
And I can't help but think that, okay, we're going to change and we're going to have a new process to do this thing. But at the end of the day, you wouldn't have it if it wasn't good for the customer. I keep thinking about the customer shouldn't care that we have these processes that make them happy and communicates with them and is transparent inside of the shop in the way we communicate with each other and watches workflow and inspects vehicles. Okay, let's get over the hump of change and the process change and embrace it as one of the greatest tools of customer intimacy.
Absolutely. One of the things I talked about was one of the case studies was quality control or final quality control on vehicles in my shop. We did an episode on this. I think it was episode number, I don't remember. But it was very early on. It's years ago. And Frank Scandura was on it. And, I can't think of the other guy's name. Frank's here. But it was a quality control one on final quality control. It was a very good episode.
We'll find out.
And so that was my case study. You know, here's the problem. We have, you know, fingerprints, we're not resetting lights, have oil change stickers not in the windshield. How can we adopt this change model to bring a better process in? That way the customer doesn't have to suffer these incidentals that they shouldn't be suffering.
Yeah.
It's very good. So I went through the whole process of change, relate, repeat, and reframe, and actually got a couple good comments of people who are like, hey, we need to do this process. Like, this is a process we need to adopt. Because it shocked me when I got in this industry that there was no final quality control on vehicles. There was just, hey, the technician's done with the work, so the car is ready to go. And that, to me, is amazing that you don't have another set of eyes on the vehicle before you release it to the customer.
Tom Hamm was on there with us.
Tom Hamm.
Yeah, Tom Hamm. And it was a bonus episode. Bonus episode 7. Tracy's calling that up, and it's interesting.
March of 2020.
March of 2020, bonus episode 7. I'm surprised we didn't put it out in Remarkable Results or Town Hall Academy. We put it out as a bonus. Maybe I was so excited I had to put it out. Just get out quick. Don't hold it.
Well, that was at the peak of COVID.
I think what we were doing is we were just doing a few extra things. And, you know, if we are at the peak of COVID and people had some time to rethink, I think that's why we did it. We called it Final Inspection.
Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Cool.
It was a good one.
You, Frank, and Tom Hamm.
Yeah, it was a good one. It was a good one. But that whole process, right? That's a process. It doesn't matter if you have a digital inspection, final quality control inspection, or whether you don't.
Yeah.
It's the whole process that you need to adopt. And a lot of shops are like, well, we don't have the time to go look at a vehicle after the technician's already done the work. We're just going to trust the technician. He's done the work. Technician fixes the car, but they might leave a tool laying on the floorboard. They might not have put the sticker. They might not have reset the light. They might left a dirty rag on the floor. They might have. There's a couple different things that technician might have done, not because they suck, because they're human, and humans make mistakes. So why don't we go back behind? And this, the relatability factor came from the whole software industry, right? In software, you don't release software without somebody looking at it. I'll even relate it to this. You don't release any of your episodes without Tracy going through it, listening to it, editing it, right? Yeah. That's your quality control process.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You would never think about just turning around and putting one out, right?
No. I mean, I did that. I did that in the early days.
Absolutely.
I had total control.
Yeah.
But I realized that I wasn't going to grow and expand and do more things and create the aftermarket radio network by being the only person that does it. So I started to build my team, and
which, by the way, Tracy is fantastic.
You know what,
Carm? I'm starting to like her way more than I like you. And that's probably not good, but
no,
actually
it
is good.
You should thank me for a really good hiring decision.
Yeah, it was a wonderful hiring decision. It was one of the best. So
it was a tough interview process, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
I know this is going to sound a little redundant, Chris, but it was Vinny Lucido yesterday who said something about bringing in a breathing expert for his people.
Wonderful.
She's sitting here next to me, right? She grabs my microphone and for the
first time ever, she says something on one of the podcasts.
Awesome.
And she agrees. And I said, Vinny, this is I'm being awesome. Redundant because I'm saying it so often here because I'm so proud because
that's awesome.
I've asked her to. Let's,
I know.
Let's try
I see
stuff.
Her interjecting on the, this is wonderful.
Yeah, she's interjecting.
That breakthroughs of Vision 2022.
Yes, this is awesome. Yes. This is awesome.
So she said, Dad, I'll just be the peanut gallery. If I can contribute something, I'll just be here.
That's wonderful.
I know.
Ah,
right?
That's a huge, wonderful step.
Big
that's
step,
awesome.
Big step, because she's been saying no for 9 months.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I started to warm her up 3 months ago, and bam, we come to Vision, and it happened.
That's awesome.
So I got this book from Dan Sullivan, Who Not How.
Oh, wonderful.
And I can't remember, but I think someone sent it to me. I think. It could have been Barry Barrett, I think.
Yeah.
Because he sent it to me when I was, a year ago, when I was going after Tracy to come to work for me. Barry and I are doing an episode, and, you know, pre-studio, pre-record, and he says, hey, what's going on, Carmen? And I tell him the story, right?
Yeah.
And he goes, you got to read Who Not How. You'll get it in a couple of days, and Tracy's your who, but you don't know it yet.
Yeah, nice. Wonderful. Wonderful. Greg Bunch was the one who turned me onto that book.
Yeah.
You know, I don't read for things that shock me anymore. There's nothing nothing new under the sun. I've read, you name it. I've read the concept. I've read the idea. But it makes you think, and it reinforces something you already know, something we already know, looking for that who, right?
Yeah.
Once again, I'm going to change my business. I'm going to change my business. Go find that coach. Go find that 20 group. Go find those other eagles. If you're going to fly with the eagles, be an eagle. Go find some eagles, right? Drop that ego. Be confident enough to get in that room. Be confident enough to have that conversation with those people. But find those who's.
Yeah.
Find that relatability factor. And then, you know, once again, going back to the change thing, repeat it. Whatever process you have. And this came out in the class yesterday. Yeah, we start a process, but then it gets busy. And all the wheels fall off. And we're done. And the process dies. Well, of course it does, right? 66 days to create a habit. I mean, it's not 32. It's a couple months.
Yeah.
Solid over and over and over and over and over and over again. We do it to ourselves. We got to repeat excellence. And excellence is hard, right? The whole 10,000 hours is hard. It's a extremely hard thing. Another great book I'm reading right now, which all plays into it, is Grit by Angela Duckworth, I believe. And it's about, you know, she's kind of taken this term grit and applied it to people. And why are some people very successful? Because of their grit, because of their gritty nature. Like they don't stop. And there's a little bit of passion. You got to love what you do, and then you got to be willing to, you know, throw it on your back and just go. And failure isn't final, and you just continue on that journey because you have that passion for it. You're changing your perspective, but you just don't let it go, right? So it's a wonderful thing to think about, you know, because we all get on it. Sometimes we get our butts kicked, but how do you look at things? You know, I'm not a glass half full, glass half empty. I'm a staring at the desert. I don't care how much water I have in my glass. Because I've got a desert I'm running through.
Yeah.
I look at things optimistically, but then I'll turn around and be very pessimistic and say, this is going to fail. And then I'll sleep, and then I'll turn back to optimist and say, okay, no, I can do this. And then the next day, so I'm battling back and forth between the two constantly. But I think it keeps me in check and keeps my vision in check.
I'm just like you. I'll challenge, Trace, my own think, you know, talk to my wife and friends, and they'll say, where the hell is this coming from, right?
Right. Yeah.
Because I fill in the glass way out there trying to say, then, you know, here comes my intuition. Here comes the spectrum of life and the senses that are around you and all this stuff. And you go back to the push that you made on a thought or an idea. I am willing to back it down, take my foot off the gas when I think it's right and come down to the kind of way you could launch or do.
Yes.
But I want to be out there. And I think my whole life has been out there. And people would look at me and say, are you serious?
Yeah.
And I would say, I guess you don't know me well enough because you'll know when I'm serious. I'm right now testing or ripple the water and see how big the waves are that come back.
Absolutely.
And so thank you for letting me rethink that. I thought I was just weird.
No, it is. It's weird. You know,
it is weird.
It is weird.
Thank you.
We're weird. We're weird people.
Don't be telling that to her.
I think she already knows. I think Tracy already knows. I have a feeling she's been around you for a little while.
I looked over. She was shaking her head.
Yeah, she was. Yes. But it is interesting, right, the way we – but it's okay. if we have this hope. And she says, you know, optimists get a lot further in life than pessimists. And there's this other book, Split the Difference, was it the New Yorker guy? I can't ever remember his name. But he was like, you're 27% smarter when you're positive.
Yeah.
And it's true, right? When you have the positive, you know, when you can free your mind and think, okay, I'm not going to be negative about this. I'm going to see what the possibilities are. The possibilities are endless.
Yeah.
And when you're negative, your focus is so, you got the blinders on. You're not getting very far when you got that negative attitude going on. But I do that, right? So with my team, I'll go and I'll beat them up and I'll say, why are you doing that? You know, and I will cause problems and then I'll sleep and I'll think about it. Then I'll go, okay, we'll solve the problem. I'm like, I wish sometimes I could just be the solve the problem guy and not.
But when you walk away with that, by the way, no one saw this, but Chris had his hands on a neck.
I did.
And he was shaking. I noticed that. Yeah. Oh, sure, I feel better. Yeah. And do you go back to you rewind your day?
I do.
And then do you think about, did they take me so tough that this is it and we'll never gain favor back, we'll never be his friend? Or do they say, it was just Chris blowing off steam?
You can only blow off steam so many times before it becomes you.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
Yeah, right, in that pattern, right? You can only apologize so many times for, you know, your shortcomings.
But they'll never listen to your passion because you're really trying to push, aren't you? You're trying to have them think like, a lot of times it's just, think like me, please.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah. No, and the self-reflection, one of our slides,
yeah.
Know thyself, Socrates, right? Mm-hmm. You know, taking that time to self-reflect at night and taking the time to self-reflect during the day. You know, I'll get into it with somebody during the day. Then I'm driving, I'll do, you know, breathe. And then I'll
go, you're into that breathing thing too?
Yeah. No, I'll just breathe. All right. I'm not into the breathing thing. I'll just breathe, take a minute, and then and I'm like, crap.
Deep breaths.
Yeah, that was horrible. Yeah. You're better than that.
Yeah.
But I'm really not.
I got it.
I mean, I just, it's the passion. It's very much a part of me and part of what I do, part of what you do, right? I mean, we've got a passion for what we do.
Yeah,
and that passion sometimes gets caught up in what we do and how we do it, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. Other than when we kind of, you know, funnel it off into the wrong avenues, and that might be, you know, beating up our people. And I do, you know, I used to have a couple employees, and now I have, you know, it's between 30, 40 now, you know, total. And you learn a lot, and I'm still learning a lot, right? And then you got guys who have hundreds of employees or thousands of employees, and I'm like, wow, that is incredible. Like, I don't see myself there, but I didn't see myself with this many people to begin with. And that's a lot of who's.
When I sold my business, I had 60 employees, okay? And I thought I was at the top of my game. There were a lot of reasons we sold the business, but one of them is I had this crazy thought that I wanted to go to work at the next level.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to go big time. And I wanted to lead a lot of people, more than I currently had, and all that stuff. So when I did it, and I made that move, and I went to work for the company that bought my company, it didn't take me but 30 days to realize how way, way underqualified I was to do the job that they felt, they gave me the confidence that I was going to do.
Right.
And that's when I became a more voracious reader. I was reading, going to seminars, reading every article I could possibly find, you know, on a board of directors of a association, and, you know, always going to the conferences. And I was a learned student.
That's
until
awesome.
I realized I went from nice small business to huge big business.
Right.
And I realized that I never had a chance to fill that gap in my own learning curve. And I had to go out and find it.
Well, that's wonderful. So that journey and those gaps that you're talking about is a wonderful journey. One of the guys yesterday, too, and so a couple different books that we talk about, that we've talked about is Traction.
Yeah.
You know, are you a visionary versus a, you know, integrator?
Yeah.
Well, one of them is, and I think we've talked about this conversation, the wartime CEO versus the peacetime CEO.
Right.
And all that journey that it takes. You know, sometimes the people have to understand that you love the chaos of the journey of getting to this point.
Yeah.
But once it kind of settles, and then you have to train your people, and you have to put process in place, and you have to, that might not be you. You're the one who likes to build things. You're the one who likes the chaos. You know, that's the wartime CEO. The peacetime is, okay, everything's good.
Yeah.
The books are good. We have a budget. You know, we know what our budget is. We have training that's required for our people. And I straddle both those worlds all the time. But I love wartime. I love, you know, me, it's sometimes I throw stuff in my own way. You know, just to have the feeling of...
I want to stumble so I can pick myself up again.
It.
Because when you're down there every once in a while, the view from down there is humbling.
It is very humbling.
the more you're on my show, the more I think we are brothers from different mothers.
Well, I think we are, Carl.
Yeah, really, honest to God. It's being able to do self-assessment and to realize what your strengths and weaknesses are. I'm a visionary, but when you're a solopreneur like I had been for so many years doing the podcast, which is, it's a business, a media company that I have here, having to think about tomorrow and the guests and the topics, and are we covering the stuff that the industry needs, and then go get, sit on the bulldozer and pull the levers and edit and produce and, and write and type and, and publish and all of that. They're tasks that I realized there was only one way I could be the visionary, is how to do the tasks.
Yep. And that's a great point. And this, so my point to that guy was, it's okay if you are the visionary. Sometimes you got to be the integrator, right? You have to be the one to do the work. Like, knowing yourself knows, and you might not love that, so go find somebody to do that and replace yourself when you can.
Yeah.
But you got to do the work.
Yeah.
If you want to be successful.
So it goes back to who? You know, where's your, who's your who?
Some, yeah, where's your who's and who's your who? And sometimes you have to, I mean, I think what we have to do is understand, compartmentalize that, realize there's a job that we're not good at, but if you got to do a job, you got to do a job. And I'll tell you, when you know, the startup life of the startup company in software, you know, when I started out, it was me. And like you, Carm, I did every, I wrote the software, I sold the software, I supported the software, I trained on the software, I did it all. And I only had a handful of clients, and then, you know, I hired the next person. And, you know, there's a tipping point where they're like, Chris, we do everything. We don't really have one job. I'm like, no, your job is to do whatever job is the job. But it's nice when you can then start getting an organization to have people separate. But there's just a certain point in time, you're going to have to sometimes do the work. And it's a great concept, the who, not how, if you got the money.
How do I get the money? Oh, there's a 10 podcasts we can talk about that.
Tons.
Or 30 seminars and 50 books to read.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
You just said something so important. I've got to make a point of this. Is a job that I'm not good at. So let's go back into the shop and the shop owner and in our wonderful industry that we have.
Yes.
Where technician had the dream of owning his own place. And he absolutely loves to lift the hood, smell the rubber, you know, that 50,000 mile engine, and start tearing it apart and fixing it. But he realized that he needs now to be a CEO, the person who needs to run the company and all these other tasks that will keep him in the bay. And he's not good at that.
Yeah.
But he still does it anyway. And he starts being less of a tech and a terrible service advisor. And what's an accountant?
Yeah.
What's books? What's banking? And go down that total list. What are you doing? I'm in the bays. So who's running the company? I always ask.
Yeah.
And he says, I hired people to do that for me.
Well, one of my questions I asked everybody in the audience was, do you have children? Yeah, a lot of the people raised their hands. And I said, well, do you ever do anything with your child that's something new for you? Have you ever shown your child that you can fail? Like, you can struggle it? Because most of the time, parents never show their children that they struggle at things. They want to show them that they're perfect at everything. So children grow up with this misconceived notion that parents are perfect and that they shouldn't have to struggle. So, you know, your kid's like, well, I should already know how to do this because everything you do, I should already know, which is a mistake. We should take our children and we should go learn karate with them because we don't know karate. But here's the thing about life, right? You don't know if you're good at karate or not because you've never done it before. And a lot of those people, they think, oh, I'm not good with numbers. I can tell you so many people that were techs that are wonderful with numbers, that are wonderful with accounting, that are wonderful with marketing, because they didn't have this preconceived notion of, no, I'm really good tech, I'm really good at turning the wrench. If we actually did all the things that we were good at, like, who knows, you could be one of the best polo players in the world, but have you ever played polo before, Carm?
I got to get a horse.
But you could be. I'm not saying you would be. Who knows? There's something out there that you're probably an expert at, but we start shutting ourselves off and saying, no, I don't want to try that because I'm an expert at all the things I want to do and I don't want to try something new, right? But that's what I'm saying with the technician too. You don't know.
My dream job is being a professional radio DJ.
And what are you doing right now?
Well, there's a microphone in front of me.
There is. I would say you're a professional radio DJ in the year 2022, which is called podcast, baby.
It is.
It's like the reality now.
It's talk radio squared, right?
Yeah, it is.
Exactly right.
And, but this is it. I mean, this is how we, this is our new medium. Everybody listens to podcasts now.
Yeah.
Everybody's got podcasts loaded on their their Android.
Isn't it amazing?
You are.
I haven't looked at stats in maybe a month about, you know, how many people in America listen to podcasts. And I think about 4 or 5 years ago it was 20%, but I think it's way north of that right now. Where it could be hovering around the 50% mark of people that they consume podcasts voraciously.
I'm going to assume it's going to clip radio
in the radio biz, Chris. Every DJ has a podcast.
Yeah,
they'll either record what they do during the day and make it available to any fan who wants to follow. That's why there's a million podcasts out there.
Hey, we talked about your show yesterday. How many people listen to Remarkable Results Radio? And all the people that weren't raising their hands, we said, look, and that's why I tell them, you've got a treasure trove that is given to you by the kindness of this man who has gone and dug out great nuggets of gold from many industry. I mean, looking at this wall, looking at your episodes, this is free resource. You really want to find who's go into his podcast and go learn everything you ever wanted to know about this business. And not just that, entrepreneurism, different types of things that you may not know about.
Yeah.
So it's a wonderful resource.
Thank you so much for that. And you nailed it. And every time I put my head at the pillow, I just say, I hope there's one new listener who pulled something away that helped change their life. And if not, inspire them to continue to listen, to find, as you said, a nugget. When I look back, Chris, and this isn't a commercial for what I do, and I look at what the content library looks at, I don't struggle for new topics and new ideas and new guests. I don't.
Yeah.
They come to me.
Sure,
because
absolutely.
I'm looking, I'm listening, and I'm learning, and I'm saying, ooh, that would be good. We've never done that. Recently, I said, if they could make Jurassic Park 6 and or a new Raiders of the Lost Ark and the dozen of Star Wars, I could literally take a topic we did 3 years ago, bring a panel in, different, and cover the same topic and get the 2022 slant.
Absolutely.
I will continue to have new and different and cutting-edge topics, but we're going to, and I don't want to use the word recycle, but we're going to kind of reinvent some of the stuff that we've done. You know, I've been doing this since 2015. It's 7 years now.
Yeah.
It's 7 years March.
Yeah.
This month. And some of the early episodes were gems, but right. Nobody's going to go back 7 years, 1,000 episodes and find them. I got to bring them forward.
I think that's wonderful.
Yeah,
I think you have a treasure trove to bring forward. Bring it top of mind.
It's and, huge.
I agree.
It's
and then,
huge. Yeah.
You know what? Over the years, and I've been listening, your delivery, the way that you put things together has become tremendously polished and very well put together.
Thank you.
And I'm not saying the earlier stuff wasn't, but if you go back and listen to the early stuff versus now.
I can't.
Yeah, you don't want to. Yeah, I understand.
So here it is. I'm at Dwayne Meyer's shop in Maryland, right? Jose and Lee and Dwayne. They have this incredible company. They invited me out to their
dynamic auto.
It was a 25th anniversary. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I go there. I set up a studio in their conference room, hanging out. It was a marvelous, marvelous time. And I wanted to re-interview them because they were in episode 2, 3, and 4.
Nice.
Okay.
That's
episode
awesome.
2, 3, and 4.
That's awesome.
And you should ask me, Carm, why were there 3 episodes?
Yeah.
Okay. Because it was like 50 minutes long by the time we all talked. And they were so transparent about their struggles and their vision and, you know, how they all came together, how Dwayne became a partner.
Yeah.
It was I'm pinching myself to realize, wow, I can't believe it's my second episode. So I'm sitting with the editor. And I'm saying, David Striegel from Pittsburgh was my first episode. I mean, he was the one when I called him up and I says, I've been in your shop, you don't know me, but I would love to do a podcast. And he said, of course,
nice.
What's a podcast?
Nice, awesome.
And so I had to explain it to him. And I says, I want to know, you've got a training center, you've got a beautiful business. I want to hear your story to Remarkable Results. And I go, ooh, that's interesting. I said, that could be the name of the show because I had no idea what I was going to talk about, Remarkable Results. So I called Dwayne, and I had known Dwayne because I didn't want to call anybody first who would say, yeah, sure, Carm, no problem. Feel sorry for you, sure, whatever this interview thing is about. You know, I have to get headphones. And so the first guy was a test. If I could influence this person to come on and tell their story, and it worked. Then I called Dwayne. 50-minute episode. So I'm sitting down at the editor, and I'm saying, I can't put out a 50-minute episode. Rogan goes on for 4 or 5 hours, right?
Right.
And so I said to myself, I can't do a 50-minute episode. So I carefully edited 3 20-minute minutes, right? And so I went back just before I went down there to interview them about the anniversary, if you will, of their episode 2, 3, and 4, and I listened to it. You know what? Fingers on a blackboard.
Yeah.
And I was reading the questions, Chris.
Yeah.
And oh, my God. I was prepared, but nowhere near the level of preparation that I do today, because it evolved. And that's what happens to businesses today.
100%.
They learn and they evolve and they reach for skies that they're unknown.
They should change. Yeah. They should evolve, or they die, right? Or they don't die. They hang on and they just... They have a pittance of a life, right?
And they screw up the market. There's so many things that are not right about people that are hanging in there.
Yeah. And you shouldn't, right? You should want to. Yeah, and it's funny, the title of that book's Change or Die, but, and Craig brings up a good point. The guy really wanted to call it Change or Thrive.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't change, you can live. But if you change, right, there's an opportunity to be, some, like you said, your podcast over that many years, now it's what's again, you had to start somewhere. And I'm very much a incremental, you know, elephant one bite at a time.
Yeah.
You can always change a little bit, incrementally. You don't have to take change and eat it all overnight.
No.
All you got to do is tweak one thing. Inspecting. First, the process. And going back to this guy's process, well, I can't get my, you know, some people do inspections, some don't. Well, your digital inspection is not going to solve your problem. Get everybody to do an inspection every day, one a day. Get them in the habit of doing this thing. Yeah, they're going to grumble. Don't tell them, do it because I told you so. Tell them, hey, look, I thought we were transparent. Don't we want to build trust and transparency? Isn't that our tagline? Isn't that the tagline of every auto repair shop? No, it isn't. But most of it, we want to build trust and transparency between the customer. And this is one way that we can do it, by inspecting their vehicle thoroughly, making sure it gets back to them safely. And here's a way to do it even better with an inspection that's digital that they can get on their phone.
Yeah.
That's truly creating trust and transparency. Don't we want to be that shop? We do. Then here's the process we need to take. And it's funny, once you create a habit with somebody, it's impossible to change the habit back. People who have been using digital inspections now for years, take that away from them, and you'd think the building's on fire. Whenever any software goes down, when they're used to this process, take that away and they don't go back to paper. Nice. They sit there and we can't do our job anymore. Yeah. It's not a revert anymore. They've already changed their process and their thought, right?
So, by the way, Tracy looked up, 41% of Americans listen to podcasts monthly, 116 million.
We talked about this before. I was in radio too, right?
Yeah.
And you're in radio, so... Radio was big. I was on a morning show. It's big. But podcasts have certainly changed in a long time.
Listen to a bunch of Chris's episodes. Every once in a while, the veil comes down and we hear a little bit, you know, about... Wasn't it an ego that you talked about working for the station and this guy? And he found himself a coach to help him. He was number one, but he knew that he, in order to be there, that he had to have help.
Absolutely.
And direction, guidance, and all that.
LeBron James. $1 million a year he spends in coaches and trainers?
Hello.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
He's... world-class athlete.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he's world-class trainers. Why don't we do the same?
I know. Honest to God. So when I start doing these episodes to have people interview me, maybe he should be one of the guys.
Oh, I'm in.
We've been talking about that a long time.
Yeah,
so we
got
to do it. I mean, you did share some stories while we've been recording with a couple guests of... This is the first time I'm saying this story.
I've been telling stories about... Again, I'm so comfortable with my guests that they just inspired me to say, that would be one thing I would want to tell people. Why not now?
I agree. You have so much now insight into this. Years and years and years of intimate knowledge now with this industry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's wonderful. You don't have the one shop owner perspective mindset.
Right.
You're not... constraint to that.
No, I'm not. And I was telling this to Tracy the other day. It was like, is not being a current shop owner hurt me or help me as the industry's premier podcaster? And when I really assessed that, I said, it probably helps me because I'm not going to tell a story about all the stuff that's going on in my shop. Yeah, our family owned a shop many, many years ago in Ade Bayer that we sold, but the fact that I have more business acumen than a single store shop owner would have because of my trek and the training that I did and the books that I've read and the people that I have sheer met in this industry who want to come on and share their stories have made me smarter in order to pull that out of people and share that with the rest of the world as a incredible resource. And so I don't think it hurts me. I think it's really because I'm more neutral and open that I can. I don't have to stop and say, "Oh, that happened in my shop yesterday."
I agree.
I don't have to stop and say that.
I agree.
I just want to stop and listen. So tell us what else happened.
I think your strength is that, but you have the entrepreneurial business journey.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
You're building a business every day, and you've learned from everybody.
Oh yeah.
And
oh,
then you give back to everybody, and that's wonderful, right? Whether or not you're running a podcast or whether or not you're running Bays, it's business, baby. And to me, it's business is business is business. You learn business and you learn it really. One of the guys I got to talk to yesterday, and he, interesting, bought a couple shops. And I'm like, well, what's your background? So he's a software guy like me, which is very cool. He's a security guy. But he started realizing like, hey, I'm really good at this service thing. So he started buying other service businesses, not just auto repair shops. He owns some HVAC stuff. He owns some electrical companies. So it's like, look, like I understand this kind of ideology and this process and how this works and all the dispatching. And I thought, man, that's brilliant, right? This guy's kind of gone above that level and said, I've kind of found my niche. I'm growing where I planted. And it's this service industry, this, you know, hey, I can fix this thing. I know what it takes to get labor in. I know that's brilliant, right?
Yeah.
To me, that's business, and that's what we really are. I think a lot of us strive to be just that, business owners and really good business owners.
Right? How does Brian Sump come from the outside world and knock
football,
it out of the park?
Right?
Football.
Wonderful.
And how does Andy Bizzub come from financial planning?
Absolutely.
And
knocks it out of the park.
And every one of those guys gets up at the conferences and talks to people about their journey, and it wasn't holding a wrench, and they're successful. And it wasn't because they were intelligent businessmen. You don't go from being a football player to a really smart businessman running some great, great shops. You commit to learning, knowing, doing, building a team, building great culture. That's what we're working so hard to try to do. I always say the word drag people over the line, but sometimes you have to. You know, maybe the words I should be using is pick them up and carry them over the line. Maybe it's a little softer way to talk about it, but they have to want to, you know, because the minute I put them down on the other side of the line, they're going to run back if they're uncomfortable. If we can motivate them and give them a nudge in the back and they go over the line and then they look back and they feel semi-comfortable about where they are now and say, now your journey begins.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm here to do.
I'm going
to
go back to, you know, how many people start something new with their kids to show them that they're vulnerable, that they're not perfect.
Yeah, yeah, I love that.
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right? So us as business owners, we don't want to show our people that we don't know what we're talking about.
Right.
So we don't want to stretch ourselves sometimes because we don't want to feel uncomfortable and incompetent.
Yeah.
And that attacks our ego directly. No, I know everything. I don't need a 20. I don't need this. I know it all, right? Because inside you're like, crap, I don't know anything.
Yeah.
But I can't let everybody else know that because then...
Yeah. I grew up in an Italian family. The father was never supposed to ever shed a tear.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. Because it wasn't manly. Right?
That's right.
Yeah. We're on this earth to stretch ourselves, right? That's the whole point. Trials and tribulations and all the things that we can go through to find what our true calling is, right? Why, Lord, why'd you put me here?
Yeah.
You put me here for a reason. I believe I'm here for a purpose.
Yeah.
I believe I'm here for a reason, right? And so it's up to me to find that reason and purpose. And that means that if I got to stretch myself, I got to stretch myself. Now, sometimes, don't get me wrong, Carm, I'm like, sometimes I just like to curl up on the couch and cry in a fetal position and say, why me, Lord? Why now? Why am I here? Right? Why did you put me on this journey? And like to pity myself because I'm not always the strong, you know, go get 'em passionate person. I have my down days, just like everybody else. But I'm still going to try and find that.
I totally, totally agree, and it is nice, very nice to have that self-reflecting time. Hey,
yes.
Thanks, Chris, for being here. Always honored and inspiring. Chris Cloutier, Autotex.me, great software company, and Golden Rule Auto Care in Dallas, Texas. Thanks, man.
Very nice. Thank you, Carm. Thank you, Tracy.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.